So tonight we're going to have a little bit of different presentation. We're going to go back to our original format, which is regular for this meeting. We're not going to be using the original manuscript tonight. And we have two special speakers, Rich and Dave. Okay? Then we'll be speaking on the 12th step. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, gang. My name is Rich Breckner. I'm an alcoholic. And I was separated from alcohol on August the 30th of 04. I think it's important to me, anyways, that I say it that way, because that's the truth of it, right? I didn't quit drinking. I didn't put the plug in the jug. My best thinking didn't bring me to AA. If any of that was true, I believe it would make me non-alcoholic. It would imply that I have power, choice, and control over whether or not I take a drink or don't take a drink, and that I have a thought process capable of overcoming alcoholism. And if any of that were true, I wouldn't have gotten in my car this afternoon and driven 4.5 hours to come sit here because I was asked to. And that's why I'm going to boogie out a little bit early. There's another group in your area that it's their group anniversary tonight, and I was asked to come share my story with that group. So I mean no disrespect when I have to run out of here at 7 to go to this other group. The short version of my story and how you folks worked with me and how I now work with others, through this chapter is I'm a guy that couldn't stop drinking. When I'm drinking, I do other stuff, as I heard a couple of you guys introduce yourselves. Bill held off all the way till page 4 before he mentioned doing drugs. So welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you just catch alcoholism, we got a great thing going here. And there are those that would argue from our book that that may just be part of the progression of alcoholism when we reach a point where it's supplemented with other things. I ended up in the hospital. I usually stopped drinking one of three ways. I ran out of money, I went in the hospital, or I went into jail. I don't ever remember a night when I had a pocket full of money and 4 or 5 drinks in, and I just said, this is a good time to head home. Right? I don't ever remember that once. Hey, let's just go home. It's 9:30 and all's well. So that should have probably been a clue, but it wasn't. I get kicked out of college, not because of my grades. I had a really high GPA. I remember things well, which is very different than being smart. My sponsor points that out to me. I could just regurgitate a book. I could read a book one time and tell you what page everything's on and usually which side and stuff like that. That means you get straight A's without studying. You don't learn about working with others. You don't learn about forming relationships with other human beings. Anything I think you're supposed to learn in the school process now. I end up in a Jesuit college in California on a Division I sports scholarship. By my senior year, I'm in federal prison for 27 kilos of cocaine. I'm drinking every day. I can't stop. I'm looking at 46 to 60 years in that penitentiary. A couple of knuckleheads from AA dressed like a total loser like me come in there with coats and ties. I mean, what's lamer than looking like this, right? And they're coming in there and talking about their white picket fence and their houses and their normal family, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And what I'm thinking, literally, I'm in a federal penitentiary looking at 46 to 60 years, and I'm sitting in the back, doing my tough guy thing, Mexican mafia style, and I'm looking at them, and I'm, honest to God, my thought is, man, these two guys, I mean, how lame. They really got it bad. Look at them. I mean, they really got it bad. I mean, someday I'm going to get out of here, and those two can never drink again. And I actually felt bad for the two guys that took time to come into that prison to share, right, their experience, because they could never drink again, which to me was like a life sentence. I was getting out someday. So I'm looking down on the two AA guys that were leaving that night to like go home and be with their wives. I mean, that blows my mind today. I eventually get out of that place and obviously get sober, and I'm sitting here today, and I don't want to get too caught up in the story. I've seen a lot of stuff my alcoholism has taken me to. I'm a surfer from Ocean City, Maryland, in my area. Everybody's seen me surf. We do a lot of AA stuff on the beach. I have a big scar across my stomach where I was stabbed in Panama, where a deal went bad. I've had my tooth through my lip. It's why my lip is jacked up underneath the beard. None of that, like, there are no consequences, right, that are going to get an alcoholic of my variety sober. I mean, you can beat me up, you can lock me up, you can threaten me, you can love me, none of that stuff, right? But what happened was this guy in Alcoholics Anonymous, his name was Jim Mallory, and Jim had a sponsor by the name of Clarence Snyder, who had a sponsor by the name of Dr. Bob Smith, and that's important to me, because a lot of alcoholics are like me. They're skeptical, and I don't believe anything you're going to say unless you could show me where you got it from and who gave it to you, right? Who told you that? Where'd they get it from, right? So that mattered to me, and what he started to do, taking me through this thing, was showed me everything that was on paper, and he always told me that if it's not in this book, it's not Alcoholics Anonymous. It might be somebody's opinion. It might be their experience. But that doesn't necessarily make it the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's in this book. And explain that allergy and the obsession that I'm sure you go through. And what he said to me that was different than anyone in my life had ever said is he said, if you want to be sober, I will walk through walls to help you stay sober. And if you don't want to meet me and do with this with me, whether or not you stay sober, there is nothing I care less about. I'm going home. Sorry, that goes to right now. I'm going tomorrow morning. I'm going to be surfing. You know, tomorrow afternoon, I'll probably be in bed with my beautiful wife doing whatever we do. I'll probably be playing with my kids tomorrow night. Probably be eating a steak dinner. Whether you stay sober or not, nothing I care less about. But if you want to stay sober, I'll drive 4.5 hours each way like I just did, you know. It'll be a 9-hour round trip if somebody wants to stay sober. And nobody had ever made the approach like that, where they made very clear to me that they could care less, but if I wanted it, they would go to any lengths. And that's always mattered to me, right? That stayed in my mind, obviously, because here we are 15 years later, and I knew that this man, he had no skin in the game unless I wanted it. And that was a very different thing. Started walking me through the book, and we met. He was retired. So we would meet 2 to 3 times a week. I still work. So I meet, what I do now with my guys is I ask for a commitment from them on Monday nights from 7 to 9. I do one guy at a time through the book. It takes me about 3 months. We go through all 12 steps Monday nights from 7 to 9 o'clock at my kitchen table. And I try to do with them what that man Jim did with me, which took a lot of time away from his wife to give to me. And I'm very clear that that's what I owe. Right, and this book says simple but not easy. A price has to be paid, and I believe that for the rest of my life, I owe that price of trying to help the next person the way that it was given to me. I'm going to just hit a couple sentences that matter to me out of the chapter, working with others, where practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. When they wrote this, there were not meetings. Okay, so intensive work with other alcoholics, he made very clear to me. He's like, that's not cleaning up the coffee pot, that's not mopping the floor, that's not breaking down the chairs. You know what that's called? That's called not being a deadbeat home group member. Right? That's not service work, that's not 12th step work, that's not being a deadbeat. That's pulling your own weight in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, what they're talking about here, intensive work with other one, that's knee to knee at the table together going through this deal. And he didn't have to explain that to me because he did it with me, right? And we all carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in this 12th step. Our mouth is the least potent form of AA. It's what we do with our feet, you know. So that man just showed me by doing it with me. And I don't know that he made very clear, I'll never ask you to do anything I don't do with you. And to this day, I don't think he did, you know. I think everything I did, we did together. It goes on to say that, you know, that works when all other activities fail, right? Doing, passing this thing on to somebody. And we carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. I think that's something that I certainly didn't want to accept that responsibility for a couple of years sober. You know, I would say things like that I heard in meetings, right? That is not what the book says. Like, you know, can't get them drunk, can't get them sober. You know, I'm not that powerful. Can't get them drunk, can't get them sober. You know what I hear, what I, you know, now, some years later, when I hear that, I'm like, what a cop-out, you know, what a cop-out. This says that God's given us this power. It's not ours, but we've been given the power that by and through us in this program to help where no one else can. Imagine that. Of all the people in the world, it's not the doctors, not the lawyers, not the Indian chiefs. We're the ones that were chosen to quite literally save the life of the next alcoholic or you know, that's in front of us. And that's a hell of a thing to process and a very serious responsibility that I take that way, and it's exciting. And the lives that I've gotten to touch and be a part of through this thing, and it appears that we get to play a part in it, but I'll tell you when I shut up how little I now know that's true. I now know that, Clarence told Jim that the chief responsibility of the sponsor is an adequate presentation of the steps. That's it. You know, nothing more, nothing less. If I'm going to sponsor somebody, and when you're new, you don't know it, but when I say, will you be my sponsor, and I'm all nervous and stuff, all I'm really asking is, hey, have you been through the 12 steps, had a spiritual experience, and are you capable of taking me through them, yes or no? Right? That's what I'm really asking a person, and I wish I'd have known that when I was brand new, because really I'm looking like, you got a nice car, I don't. Right? And I'm asking like a critical question, you know. Have you been through the steps, had this thing called a spiritual awakening, and are you capable of taking me through it? Yes or no? And hopefully we're not arrogant enough to say yes when we haven't done it, because that's this part of the 12th step, right? That we can't pass on that which we haven't done. And another thing he did with me, since I'm just telling the story of him 12-stepping me, basically, was he said in a meeting, if you're ever called on, you just say your name and that you're an alcoholic. And if they're talking about step three, you say, I haven't done that yet, so I don't have an opinion. And then you stop talking. And I didn't like doing that. Right? I mean, my ego hates that, right? I didn't get to say, oh, well, step seven, I think that's going to be, you know, a difficult step, and pontificate for 5 or 10 minutes of your meeting about something I've never done. And so you guys would be on step seven, it would come around, and I'd say, I'm not, I've never done that, you know, I pass. And he said, you get to talk about any step that you've done. And that was motivational for a guy like me. Like, it moved me along. Right, and I asked, when can I sponsor guys? And he said, now, you could do any step with them that you've done. And that's motivational, right? Because when your new knucklehead is moving faster than you, right, and they're like, well, I want to do a fifth step. And you're like, well, I haven't, you know. And I'm talking, this is with like 6 months sober, right? It's pushing me through the steps to stay just enough ahead of this guy that I can be helpful to him. And so that was a cool thing. We would literally just read. And I have lots of degrees, and he would read to me as if I couldn't read. I'm not sure what that was about, but it sunk in. And that was, you know, how we went through the whole book. And then we had a homeless shelter near my house called Diakonia. It's our only shelter. I used to love to like load up my car from there and come to the meeting and feel like I was, you know, doing great. I got like 8 guys in the car. I'm a helper, you know, I'm a 12-stepping son of a gun. And, you know, and he would say things like, what are you doing? You know, that place is like 3/4 of a mile from here. If those guys want to come to the meeting, they can walk. You're depriving them of the opportunity to come to AA. Like, you know, their own way. You just like showing up. Did you ever read this chapter? And he points out this chapter that, you know, after I share a brief outline of the program and my life, if you're interested in doing it, and my brief outline of my life would go, yeah, I get kicked out of college, I go to federal prison, I've been arrested 36 times, I have 36 convictions. I've been arrested more than that, but I have 36 convictions. Most of them are for not real serious stuff. I don't want anybody here to think I'm a tough guy gangster. I'm an idiot, right? If you looked at my NCIC, it should say drunk and stupid, right? Like, couple of bad things, but mostly just idiot, right? But those things add up. I was totally unemployable. I couldn't work at Walmart, any of that. I go through this whole process with him, spend years doing these amends, making things right. eventually finish college, finish law school. I go on to be the state's attorney for the entire state of Maryland. So I still can't work at McDonald's or Walmart, but I could run an entire state's legal thing, apparently. I served the state of Maryland as the state's attorney. Ironically, I was in charge of the gang and narcotics unit because the governor said, you apparently know something about the importation of narcotics. So I got to run this whole thing. I was in charge of lots of attorneys. I'm an attorney. I'm trying cases. I'm like, this is, wow, this AA thing's pretty great. Did that for 10 years because my sponsor told me I owed. Then went on to start my own law firm, which is now the largest DUI law firm at the beach. And I get to help a whole lot of drunks in a whole lot of different ways. Last year, I just finished my taxes. I did 287 DUI cases, which means there's 287 people that sat across my desk. And I got to go, I can't help but notice this is your fourth DUI. Do you think your drinking has anything to do with this? Right? And we get to have some really interesting conversations, and all of that happened, through these steps. Do you think you might be interested in trying these steps? Right? And that's what it says we essentially do on this first visit that's described in the chapter. We give a brief version on this first visit, let the dude talk if they want to talk, back off if they don't want to talk. And here's the kicker. When he said, stop picking up those guys from the homeless shelter, do what the book says. And it says, I leave you a copy of the book, and I say, read through this, read through those steps I told you about, let me know if you want to go through with this process. I always have a case of books in my trunk. I don't know how many big books I give away. I give away a lot of them, because that is now how I sponsor. I do just what it says. I try not to improvise, because I said, if I do that, if I just give a book and say, read, if I do what it actually suggests, I'm only going to sponsor like 1 out of 10 of these guys, and I'm not going to have a whole carload of like the cool sober bus, and I'm not going to be like, the best sponsor in AA with like 57 sponsees. And he's like, yeah, exactly. One of those guys is going to call you back and say, I'd like to go through the steps, and you know what's going to happen? They're going to probably stay sober. And so I believe the first visit, as it's described in here, and how we leave them with a copy of the book, it says, if they call back, if they're interested, then we proceed. That was something really novel to me, because I was, I was so excited. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with being excited when you're in like years 2 and 3. You're going to save the world. You're going to save AA. And it's the leading sign, I think, of a spiritual awakening is the tremendous desire to pass it on. You don't have to tell somebody to go help people if they've really had a spiritual. You can't tie them down. If I said you can't help people and that has happened to you, you will bust loose to get to the meeting or the jail or wherever you got to go to find somebody that was like you to try to help them. And if that person has not had that awakening, it seems to me that there's no amount of motivation, encouragement, or fire under their ass. That, come on, get to the meeting. You got to find yourself a sponsee. You got to help somebody. Like, I'm not going to coach you into that. It's either happened or it hasn't happened, right? And where was the? I wanted to talk about at the end of that visit. It's page 95 that I'm talking about. If anybody likes page numbers here, that if he's sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. After doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. He shouldn't be pushed, prodded, his wife, his friends, nobody. If he's to do this deal, the desire must come from within. So there's no paragraph in this book that I've found that says, what we do is throw him into the car and take him to a meeting. Like we're taking hostages. And I hear that all the time. That was not my experience. I'd never had it done to me. We're taking you to a meeting. And they're like, get in. Right? And I hear people talk about, I was sandwiched between two guys in the back seat. I'm like, that's like a hostage situation. Right? And it wouldn't have worked on me. And quite the opposite worked on me. Right? When you tell me, I don't care if you get sober. I'm having a nice life whether you get sober or not. Going surfing, having some dinner, big steak. What are you up to? Going back to the homeless shelter, right on. Hey, if you want to try this, let me know. And that I think is our deal of that was attractive to me, right? Of we'll help you if you want it, but we don't really care. And when I started doing that first visit was a I think they're called a colander. Is that anybody a better cook than me? Where you put the spaghetti in colander. And like the what? What is it?
Colander.
Colander, right? It just kind of sorts it out. And what's left is what we work with. And it got rid of a lot of ego of trying to decide who wants it and who doesn't, having a whole bunch of people in the car, and how many people do I sponsor, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so who do I sponsor is the people that decided to, that they want to do the steps, because that was the decision I had to make. And I hear people say, and it's funny, and I have that experience of when people ask that question about how many people do you sponsor, they're like, well, I think five, but there's, you know, 20 that say I'm their sponsor, you know, like whatever number it is, there's like always a couple of them that are really active and call and come over. So you want to talk, should I leave the second visit maybe for you? Is that a good place? It gets us like halfway through the chapter of working with others. I want to tell one story and I'm going to shut up before I got to run over there, because I don't know how many people. That's the other thing. I don't get caught up in the word sponsor. That's nowhere in our book, by the way. I just like taking people through the steps. And where I live, there's lots of people that like taking people to Starbucks. There's lots of women that like taking the other women to get their nails done and be a good friend and go to the spa. And if you ask them what chapter the steps in, they don't have a clue. But that doesn't stop them from saying that they'll sponsor another man or a woman, right? When they just don't have the humility to go, I'm sorry, I have no idea what I'm doing, and I can't help you get sober by taking you to Starbucks. You know, there's no chapter on, like, sobriety through Starbucks, right? But it might sound like I'm taking a dig or making a joke, and I am making a joke. But you know what that person is doing is they're trying, and they're offering the best of what they have, which unfortunately is nothing. Right, and that's how a lot of us get a little bit lost, is they're offering the best of what they have and they're very well-meaning, which is a far cry from where many of us, certainly like me, started. You know, they're trying. And I was working with this guy, Drew. And Drew kept going. When people have these, they go, I already have a sponsor, and I can see them dying, and I'm good, and I'm sure you guys are, spotting somebody dying in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you go, you know, hey, where are you on your steps? And they go, well, you know, Big Paul is my sponsor, and you know Big Paul. Big Paul's been sober. He's been dry for 30 years. He wouldn't know a step if it hit him in the side of the face, right? But he's a nice guy, and I was always taught we don't ever say anything bad about anybody's sponsor. And you just go, great, Big Paul's your sponsor. If you ever want to do the steps, you can just come over to my house on Mondays, and we'll do the steps, and Big Paul can be your sponsor. And I have done that with probably 100 guys. You know, that's great. You have Big Paul. What a great guy. If you'd like to do the steps. So, you know, that's when I say I have no idea how many guys I sponsor, because I'm a step taker through her. I might not be their sponsor. They can have Big Paul or Fat Frank or whoever the heck it is, right? That's, you know, got a gazillion years of sobriety and they've never done the steps. And I just get to be their step taker through her. And so I get this guy, Drew, I'm like, you're, and it gives them the fame, right, of saying, oh, I got Big Frank with 52 years sober and no steps. But they don't know that. They're new. Right, you go, that's cool, man. You got Big Frank. We'll just do steps. And we do that, and I get this guy, Drew. Drew's a retired merchant marine. And I don't know if you know, I didn't know this, but I know it now. Merchant marines get a huge pension. This guy got a lot of money at the end of every month. And he couldn't go broke, because every time he'd like screw up, a new check would come. And money is like the enemy of the alcoholic. We think it's what we want, but it's what kills us. And Drew, we get 30 days drunk, 60 days drunk, 6 nights drunk. And I finally convince him, let's like try these steps. And he gets through the steps for the very first time. And then he tells me he's got this big sailboat in Annapolis, Maryland, which is a sailing place. And he says, I'm going to sell my house. I'm going to sell everything now that I've been through these steps. You know, he's got 90 days sober. He's seen God. He knows it all. And I'm going to sail that sailboat down to Boca del Toro in Panama. And I'm going to hitch that thing up in the harbor. And I'm going to listen to Jimmy Buffett music. And I'm just going to, you know, be retired in paradise under the palm trees. And I'm thinking, like, holy shit, this is going to end bad. You know, Drew's going to be dead in no time. And But it says that I'm not supposed to say that in working with others, that it says that a man or a woman can stay sober if they've done this work any place, any time, the most sordid spots on earth is what it says, and that I don't know. So I said, are there meetings down there? And he goes, I don't know. And I go, can you check that out first? So he does this like run down there, and he comes back, and he says, they're not in, no, there's... And I took some books, and they don't seem to even understand what I'm talking about. And I'm like, well, they speak Spanish, idiot. You know that? And I'm like, before you go, we ordered a case of Spanish big books from New York. And if you guys, you know, everybody knows how to do it. You just call them up and get a case of big books. And so I helped this guy load his sailboat, and we put this on, and he sells this. I mean, he's gone. And I'm crying as this boat's going out because I know I've had lots of guys die. And I know Drew's going to be the next one. And a couple years go by, 3-4 years, and I'm having a crappy day in court, and the phone rings. And it's a weird phone number, and I answer it. And on the other end of the line is some woman's voice who says, Hola, me llamo Rosa, yo soy alcoholica. Who passes the phone to somebody. Hola, me llamo Isabella, yo soy alcoholica. Hola, me llamo Juan, yo soy alcoholica. Hola, me llamo Polito, yo soy alcoholica. This goes on for like 5 minutes. Finally, the last voice is, hey, Rich, this is Drew. You just talked to the Boca del Toro group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm still sober. And that was like 4 years later, right? And I would have bet every penny I had that Drew would be drunk and dead, and instead the guy started AA in Panama, right? And is doing great, and he's still sober. So one of my favorite things is, while I'd like to take this seriously, it's good to have some perspective. What my friend in California says, that our job as a sponsor and going through the steps is primarily to keep the monkey busy until the miracle happens. Right. That's really all we're doing, you know, keeping that monkey busy until that miracle happens, and that I have a little bit to do with it, but not much, you know. And thank you guys for listening. It's cool to meet you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good evening, everybody. My name is David Everson, and I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, David.
I'm grateful to be here. Grateful to be alive and sober and awake in Alcoholics Anonymous. This program saved my life very, very clearly. God separated me from alcohol on June 24, 2007. It was a violent separation. I was found in a spare bedroom of my mom's home, where I was living for 5 years, out of work, unemployable, out of hope, drinking a bottle of vodka a day. And they found me in a pool of blood, where I had apparently had a couple grand mal seizures and bit a crescent-shaped slice out of my tongue. And I was vague recollections of lying on the floor, seeing a lot of people in uniforms around me, paramedics, police officers, I believe, talking about me and to me. And I woke up in a hospital in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, with a bunch of tubes sticking out of me, all alone in a hospital bed. And I was scared to death. And I knew that all of my denial, all of my, oh, no, I got this. Don't what do you mean? I have a problem. You were the problem. And all of the trying to not talk about my problem, but avoid my problem, had all those chickens had come home to roost. And I heard a little voice saying, you're done. And I believe that was God, because he'd had enough. And by the grace of God, I found some early AA meetings and a rehab up near West Point. And I was there for several months. And then a sober house nearby here in Springfield. And I started going to AA meetings. And that's where I met the man who would be my first sponsor. My home group is A Vision for You. We meet on Thursday nights in Springfield. That's been my home group all along. I'm not new to sponsorship, but I've had some sponsorship experiences. And as I look back, I realize that God is giving me things when he realizes that I can handle those things. So I have some experiences of my sponsors that I've had, and I have some experiences in sponsorship that I can share, and where I am now. the guy that I was attracted to ask me to sponsor him sponsored a lot of people, and he was doing a workshop in Woodbridge. And we would go from the sober house, we'd go to meetings all the time, and I would listen to this guy talk, and there was something different about that guy. I didn't know, couldn't put my finger on it. He's very soft-spoken, but boy, when he spoke, it was powerful. He talked a lot about God. And one of the guys that I was living with in sober house said, that's the guy you should get to sponsor you. And of course, I'm timid and shy and nervous, and as Rich was saying, and I did go up to him and eventually and asked if he would sponsor me. And he asked me my name. He says, well, I sponsor about 6 or 8 guys at a time. But in a few weeks, I'll have some time freed up. And, do you have a big book? I said, yeah. He said, well, why don't you read the big book from the preface to page 164 between now and then we'll talk. And I kept going to those workshops and watching him and listening to him. And a few weeks went by, and I went up again and asked him. And he says, okay. He says, you got a job? I said, no. Do you drive? I said, no. He says, okay, here's my phone number. Call me Tuesday morning, we'll take it from there. And he started bringing me through this book of Alcoholics Anonymous over the phone. And that was a wonderful experience for me in every way, because this guy, while he was very soft-spoken and kind, he was also tough. Because his sponsors over the years were very tough, and he wouldn't put up with anything. And as Rich was saying about talking about what you have experienced or steps you've been through, I remember my first speaking commitment. I was scared to death. I was going to go on a speaking commitment with another guy, and I asked my sponsor, what do I do? He says, talk about your experience, not your opinion. But where are you? You're not at step 3 yet, but you just talk about a little bit about you, where you've been. Nobody wants to hear war stories, but just about where you are, and then stop. And I did that, and I remember I was beet red and sweating and nervous, and it went okay, because a lot of people came up and said, oh, that was good. I thought, what a relief. But that was good advice. My biggest problem in Alcoholics Anonymous was certainly my drinking, but my biggest problem was my spiritual malady, because I had this feeling from the get-go that I'm a loser, that I'm never going to fit in, that I'm always the fifth wheel, and people are just going to find me out. And no matter what happened, you could compliment me, and I would smile and say thank you, and I would think deep down, you're just saying that to be nice, because I don't deserve those kind thoughts. And that's the way I was, spiritual malady. Something was missing in here, and I didn't know what it was, and I chased it with booze, and I chased it with all kinds of bizarre behavior that was all destructive, and my sponsor helped me see those things and realize that the problem was in between my 2 years and has nothing to do with those things that I was looking at. So he gave me an assignment early on, and it was to read one of the appendices in the back of the big book, and it's about the spiritual experience. And it's only about a page and a half long, and I'm sure you all have seen it and read it. But my assignment was to read those 2 pages and underline every word that either said change or was some sort of a synonym for change. And there were about 16 or 18 of them, and I underlined them and circled them all. And there's like revolutionary there's personality changes, there's just changes again there, again. There's recover, that's a change if I'm recovered. There's growing, if I'm growing, that's a change. There's all through, that's all thinking. I can see, wow, there really is a lot about changing. And then, of course, the very end with that quote from Herbert Spencer about contempt prior to investigation. Because that was me when people were talking to me about my drinking and their concern for me, that I didn't know anything about AA, I didn't know anything about rehabs, but I sure had an opinion on them, and it was all wrong, but it was all driven by fear. So that's a good basis to be getting from a sponsor. But as I went through the work, and he always introduced himself as a recovered alcoholic, and I didn't do that. And then gradually, in time, I guess probably as I said early on when I first started speaking, God kind of puts the thought in me when he thinks I'm ready. I realize I am recovered, provided I have I keep in fit spiritual conditioning and follow these steps and these principles to the best of my ability, that drinking is not an issue. No, my job now is to be of service. So that was valuable for me, coming from that man. And as far as sponsoring people, he would point out to people in my home group, because I'm sober now a few years, he said, there's a new guy, you should go up and talk to him. And I would talk to the guy, and that was about it, because I don't have anything to offer anybody. Again, that's my mindset there, spiritual malady. And then we had one guy, he says, that's the guy I think you should really sponsor, go up and talk to him. And the guy was about my age, and I had hemmed and hawed, and kind of somebody else ended up working with the guy. But 2 years later, I did end up sponsoring him. And we had a very good rapport and made a lot of progress. And unfortunately, he had a heart condition and he died. Not from drinking, but because of his health. And that was really sad and tragic because he was a great guy. But other people I've sponsored because I'm thinking, well, I've been through the steps, I've been through the work, and I should be sponsoring people. So it was a daunting task to me, really daunting. And I felt just this intimidation, really, even though nobody was saying, you need to, you know, but I was feeling that. There were guys that I was introduced to that asked me to work with them, and I started work with them. And wouldn't you know, almost all of them went out and drank. And I would do my best and follow to sponsor as I was brought through, as I remember being brought through by my sponsor. Once we got to the fourth step, there came excuses as to why I'm not done with the fourth step yet, or this, that, and the other thing, or then they just didn't call. And I found out later, yeah, they went out. Some of those guys, I don't know where they are, but I hope they found a solution. So, but for me, again, coming back to what I need to hear when God, it's probably been said to me many times, but I'm finally hearing it when I'm ready to hear it. There's a gentleman in my home group who was talking about the 12th step one night. And, of course, the 12th step, as you know, is having had a spiritual awakening. As a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And he said, 12th step work is not always sponsorship. It's carrying this message in all our affairs. And that gave me a little glimmer there, because I thought, well, yeah, I'm not a big salesperson. I'm not a sales guy. I just don't feel comfortable, you know, going out there, hey, I'll bring you through the steps. That's just not me. But I'm certainly doing my best to practice these principles, whether they're at work or whether it's my family or the people I know, people that I have relationships and involvements with. And that gave me a lot of comfort. So I appreciate that a lot. And as time went by now, currently, I've had a couple calls from guys that I know quite well asking if I would be willing to sponsor a couple guys because they had a couple people in mind. And I said, sure. And wouldn't you know, both of those guys ended up asking me to sponsor them, and I'm sponsoring both of those guys today. But we're going about it differently, which kind of mentioned it. We're not here to sell anything, but if you want what we have, we'll do anything we can to help you have the experience that we've had. And those are all outlined in our big book. So that's been a real blessing. But daunting task indeed. I know we're talking about the 12th step and working with others, but part of working with others is bringing them through the work. And I already mentioned my success rate or lack of it with a lot of guys that going out in the fourth step. And I'll share something about that just happened to me in the last 3 days. I have a guy that I'm working with who's finished up with his fourth step, and yet he's supposed to be calling me twice a week, and sometimes he calls, sometimes he doesn't, or sometimes he makes home group, does sometimes he doesn't. And I find out about the last minute, oh, okay, I'm bathing tonight, I'm out of town. And then, can I call you tomorrow? And I said, sure. And then no phone call comes. I think, well, I think we need to have a talk. So I sent this guy a text message just this weekend. saying, I ask this of the guys that I sponsor. One, willingness. Two, take directions. Three, be accountable. Four, be prompt. And I'm not seeing that. And there are good things, and there's some things that need to be done, however. And that fourth step is a very daunting thing, because all that willingness all of a sudden meets the thinking mind. Because the process of the fourth step is getting rid of ego and self, and it's fighting and kicking and screaming because it does not want to die. And that's what we do in the fourth step, is we're looking and uncovering the things that are blocking us from our fellows and from our Creator and of being of service. And so I said, well, you think it over and let me know. And if you want to proceed, let's do it. If not, I wish you well. And it's absolutely no problem. It's not going to affect our friendship. But I'm not going to waste my time. And I got a phone call within 10 minutes. And we talked for a while, and his voice was shaking. He says, I'm desperate. I really want to do this. I'm so sorry about being lax and this and that. And I said, that's no problem. I'll talk to you Tuesday. He said, great. I'm sharing that because while I'm talking with him, I'm remembering a guy named David Everson, who was working with his sponsor, Peter M., and was supposed to call his sponsor twice a week. And was kind of feeling his oats because I've got a sponsor and things are going great. I really like going to my home group on Thursday nights and everything's just really great. And, of course, I'm sort of, you know, feeling my oats there. And I was going with a guy that I live with in that sober house. He needed to go to an office and do some work or something. And I said, you want to come for a little for the drive? And I said, sure. And when we got there, I realized, oh, I'm supposed to call Peter at 10 o'clock, and it was after 10. He said, well, go ahead and pick up the phone. So I called. Peter said, you're supposed to call 10 minutes ago. He said, yeah, sorry. Yeah, and you didn't call Tuesday. I said, oh, I didn't. And then he very quietly just let me have it. He says, you know, you came to me and said you go to any lengths, and you had all this desperation, and you wanted what I had, and you go do absolutely anything to get sober. Says, I'm not seeing that from you at all. I don't need to be sponsoring you. So we could end this right now, and I'll sleep like a baby tonight. This is all on you, and I'm just not seeing it. And when I hung up the phone, I was white as a sheet. And I said, oh, my God, what have I done? And I talked to this other guy, happened to be named Peter, too. This guy, my roommate in a sober house. And he says, well, I'll talk to Peter. He sent Peter a long email. And he explained that I was helping him, so kind of covered for me, and all that, and explained the situation. And he got back one word response from Peter: understood. And that Thursday, when I went to home group, I saw my sponsor there. He didn't even bring it up. It was like it never even happened. But you can bet I was never late calling him again. Not ever. So sponsorship for me now is different, because I have, maybe because I've learned more, and maybe because I'm listening to my higher power more, and ego's out of it. My job is to be of service. And I think that gentleman was right on the money when he said 12-step work is not always, certainly sponsorship is very important, because how do we get here? How do we get recovered? It's through the guidance and support of a man or woman that's sponsoring us and showing us the way, and we're doing what they did. But it's also about being of service in our community, being of service at our jobs, being, as I heard somebody say the other the day, being the best example of a big book that anybody saw, whether they were in Alcoholics Anonymous or not. But that's very, very important. To thine own self be true. And having had a spiritual awakening now for some time and continuing to work as the best of my ability to follow these principles. I can sleep at night. I don't have a white picket fence. I live with my sister and brother-in-law in a little town, and I'm very happy there, and I hope they're happy with me being there as well. But I'm content, and I'm at peace. And most importantly at all, I feel close to my Creator, because He's the one that brought me to AA. And AA brought me back to a relationship with my Creator. So it really comes circle there. So I could talk a little bit about amends and things like that, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're talking here about working with others. But that's been a little bit about my experience, the things where I've fallen short, but maybe they were meant to be that way. In other ways, where I've learned a lot from mistakes I've made while being sponsored, and mistakes I've made while sponsoring. Continue to always look forward and do our best. That's all we're asked to do, and it has to come from the heart, because that's exactly what we're called to do, to be of service in any way we can. So it's about 25 after, so I think I'll open it up for anybody with comments or questions on the 12th step. Thank you.
Floor is now open.